Yo, what's cracking? This your homeboy Ice Cube, and you tuned in to Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. You know what it is, baby.
Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 41 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This week's episode is being brought to you once again by Spark R&D, manufacturers of some of the most reliable, durable splitboard bindings in the world. They're made up in Bozeman, Montana. Those guys are really, really good. Been a sponsor of this podcast for a long time. So if you're interested in splitboarding, you definitely need to check out Spark R&D. This week's episode is a banger. We've got Julia Moreno, Danny Davis, and Red Gerard. If you've been snowboarding or paying attention to the Olympics, you're probably familiar with these athletes. They're all competing on the Mountain Dew Tour, and it's actually called the Dew Tour, but it's sponsored by Mountain Dew, and they have the opportunity to go back to the Olympics as well. So we're going to go ahead and kick off this interview. The first question cut off a little bit as we were recording, but I basically asked, you know, with COVID, how's that going to affect traveling and training? What's the last year been like for you guys?
You know, other than having the past little year off where we were all trying to stay distant and all that, and still trying to do a little bit of that, but mainly it's just, I don't know, I guess the COVID test and all that for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit different with like having, there's new regulations and rules that we have to follow, and there's just like certain things that they don't like let us off as easily, well, especially on the U.S. team. Just trying to keep things a little bit safer for everyone so that we can have a smooth year.
Yeah, I think it's just the travel scene, really, just making sure you got your right documents filled out to get into Europe or Canada, or, you know, we couldn't go to New Zealand or Australia this summer. So staying on your board has been a little bit of a challenge just over the summer months. Usually we can snowboard from January straight through to December, you know, going traveling the world. But that really was the only thing that changed for me, was just not going to South America, not going to Southern Hemi. But otherwise, you know, as locked down as maybe a lot of people have been around the world, I feel like the snowboarding community, the mountain bike community, surfing, skateboarding, we've all been forced to go outside and do our thing and continue to do what keeps us happy. And luckily, being outside is good for the pandemic scene. So we've been lucky. We've been able to stay on our boards.
Yeah, I was back home visiting my mom, and she told me that there was a period of about 2 months that she would walk down to the beach and go for her little daily walk. And, you know, she's 75 years old, and the police would stop her every day and say, "We're going to ticket you if you're out here." And she's like, "But I need my exercise." Here in the mountains, you know, we were able to just go out and play and go, you know, splitboard and go for hikes. And, you know, even the resorts were open until a certain point. You mentioned New Zealand. Do they still have the same amount of parks and pipes that they did, say, 5 years ago? What we're noticing here in North America is, I mean, I grew up riding pipe, and if I want to go ride a half pipe right now, I got to drive 6 hours to go to Park City. And even the resorts I knew in Colorado, like, we all had these cool little pipes and these great parks top to bottom. Have you noticed that that has changed in New Zealand? And then how is that going to affect kind of what you guys are doing long-term here in the United States?
Yeah, there's less half pipes. We were talking about this on an earlier call, and it's definitely been a subject that people are asking about. And, you know, there's probably 3 22-foot half pipes here in the U.S. Jackson Hole used to do a small, me and Red had a super fun session on the Jackson Hole half pipe back in a few years ago. And that was a really good small half pipe. I know North Star does a small half pipe. There's definitely a lot of that still around in the U.S., but harder to find. You're absolutely right, man. And I think with Vail kind of making its park smaller, we kind of are thanking the snowboard gods for keeping things like Woodward around and stuff, who are actually pouring more resources into making great snowboard parks and kind of expanding their action sports division of their mountains and stuff. So I think here in the U.S., we're probably some of the luckier park riders in the world. Europe seems to have a pretty good layout of parks. You know, you got Lox and Saas-Fee and Absolute Park, and there's a lot of good parks in Europe. And New Zealand, I think same thing though. It's just harder and harder for these resorts to keep a great terrain park maintained, you know. But for us, I think we travel the world and go to some of the greatest snowboard parks, so sometimes it's hard for us to see it, but I definitely see less of them.
A part of me wonders, you know, I remember, I mean, I'm 41 now, and so go back 20 years ago, and I could watch, you know, a comp, and somebody was doing a backside 180, or, you know, a 270 onto a rail, and it was really cool. And then it was pretty attainable. Even the big mountain stuff, that's when we were like, okay, like, I want to start competing. And my friends and I, like, we saw what was going on. And now it just seems like there's a little bit more of a gap, you know, just with the tricks that are being thrown down. This one goes back to you, Danny. How did the public respond when, you know, with doing a switch method? I mean, it was so different than, you know, what we had been seeing. And, you know, on a technical aspect, an incredibly hard trick, but maybe different than the training that revolves around, you know, something that's corked out or with lots of spins. Is that a progression of snowboarding that we might see kind of go back just to that kind of old school style, or are we just so focused right now on the progression?
Yeah, I mean, progression's always, I feel like, you know, it's always been going. I mean, I remember even when I was exploring some of the switch tricks and slower spinning tricks, if you will, we were still, that's when the first airbags were coming out. We were all chucking doubles into airbags and trying to learn these tricks. And Sean had a private pipe with the foam pit. And so even when that was always kind of happening. And I think I said this earlier, but it's like, I got really lucky because at that time it was so heavy dependent on spinning and flipping and that next best trick. And I certainly wasn't the first one, you know, JJ and Ross Powers and some of those dudes were doing backside threes and switch McTwists. And I remember Elijah Teeter doing switch methods in his run, but it was just a time in snowboarding where I also had a couple of those new tricks to back up the run, where I could have a little bit of freedom with like a straight air. And, you know, half pipe snowboarding too, we have amplitude is really a big part of your scored run. So kind of lucky with that, if you could do some of these slower spinning tricks really big next to a 1080 or 12 or whatever, it looked pretty good. But in slopestyle, that's harder, you know, like there's only three jumps for you to go berserker on, and kids end up going berserker on them all. But I think we'll always be pushing sort of that flip and spin, but it always comes back to like, who's making them look best. And like the way that Red does his front double 12 off the side hits is, you know, better looking than many of the riders out there. And a lot of the tricks that Jules does too, she's trying to put this, you know, put her own kind of twist on it so that it's got a little differentiation from what like Anna Gasser's doing or something like that. You know, you'll always have style in snowboarding, and sometimes you get lucky and something sticks and people really are drawn to it the way you do something. And that just comes with the art of style for sure.
Yeah, I would say styles like obviously like big tricks are really cool, but a big trick that someone did doesn't like really get any attention if it wasn't like stylish, you know, like people are like always, there's always a wow factor. If it's like big trick, small trick, whatever, it has to be like stylish for people to like look at it and want to like learn from it and, you know, just watch it and get impressed by it, I think.
Trick boy.
It's the deciding factor between first and second a lot of the time.
For sure. How's the vibe up top when you guys are getting ready to drop in? I never got to really do much of the half pipe or slope style contest. I've done the big mountain stuff. It's a great community. I mean, people are really encouraging themselves on. You know, if you see somebody kind of maybe not having the best day, you're stoking them out. I mean, is that the same at this level of competitive snowboarding for you guys?
Yeah, for sure.
I think it just goes in waves too. There's some people that want to be by themselves and want to just be with them and their coach or them and their support or whatever. And then, you know, I think for me and Julia, we're always in a pretty tight group with our US team and our other country friends and all that, where we're always staying pretty close to each other and talking and stuff. You know, it's cold up there playing some games or whatever. But yeah, I think it really depends on what kind of competitor you are or how you, I don't know how you think you do best.
I mean, I think there's a lot of riders that, yeah, like Red said, so some try to be more like isolated and do their own thing. But I feel like the majority are kind of out there with their friends having a good time, because at the end of the day, that's like snowboarding down to its core, is like to be with your friends and like enjoy the moment. I feel like that's where like a lot of this progression comes from, because you kind of see friends like building off of one another. Like you see them do this and then you kind of want to do it too. So yeah, camaraderie is definitely really nice in this sport.
I love that you mentioned friends. We had Scotty on a few months ago and he was talking about the friends crew and just how, you know, there was that time in snowboarding where it was like, God, these guys are like ripping and they're friends and they're actually out getting to enjoy all this together. And that was so inspiring. And so, and even here, you know, it's really great when you get to see people, you know, I love splitboarding. And when you get to take people out and actually do that with other people, it's always that much more fun. Speaking of backcountry, do you guys get much time just to go out and free ride and ride powder? Have you gotten into splitboarding yet? I know most of the time when I speak to athletes, their schedule is pretty busy throughout the year. And just wondering how, if you guys get any free time or downtime to go shred.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, contests kind of hit pretty hard in early season up until like February. And then after that, we do get some free time. The last 2 years, I've filmed 2 movies with Danny, actually. Just like a lot of backcountry snowmobiling stuff, a lot in Jackson where you're at right now, a little bit in Whistler, kind of all over actually, all over North America. But we definitely do get a little bit of time at the end of the season. All that, and with contests, you can really pick and choose, especially when it's not an Olympic year, pick and choose on what contest you want to do, and it frees up a lot of time.
How about splitboarding? Have you guys done much splitboarding? Is that something that you see, you know, 5-10 years from now that you'll be doing?
I've done some Abbey courses on them, but I haven't done much actual shredding. I know Danny's done quite a bit.
Yeah, we do a lot. And I mean, it's like these guys said, it's so hard in the content. And that's one reason I am not going to do the Olympic push this year is you're doing contests from, these guys have one, they're traveling to a Big Air and Steamboat, like right after Thanksgiving. And it all starts there for these guys. And they'll be busy through February, you know, just doing contests. And I think too, it's where you live, you know, like I live here in Truckee and I get out splitboarding a lot. We went out yesterday, it snowed here. Great to get out on boards. And, you know, that's just another avenue of snowboarding. And I think some people find it, some people don't, but once you start expanding your snowboarding, you kind of naturally get into walking into the mountains because, you know, like Red said, we're spending time filming on our snowmobiles and going out in a Mosquito and stuff like that around Jackson. But then, you know, eventually you get to that point where you want to go to this zone where you can't take a snowmobile and you end up walking. And then you start getting into like the alpinist side of it. I did Denali with some friends of mine, went down to Bolivia, went down to Ushuaia, and, you know, the foot access, there's just so much terrain in the world. So yeah, I think eventually you always end up getting on your feet and going exploring.
I think that's what the cool thing about splitboarding is that it like gives you the ability to like walk around and explore like you would anywhere except without having to like haul your stuff with you. And you know, it's just like super easy to do. And it's just like a fun thing. I haven't done any like intense splitboarding, but I've done it like just around like home and stuff. And, you know, you go with like your dogs and it's just like a fun thing to do. But during the season, I'm trying to get out more. And well, not this season, not during like the next couple of months because I'll be preoccupied with the comps, but I would love to get out in the backcountry after.
The freeway to hit the mountains, you know, yeah. I mean, Lyft and season passes and just the resorts are so packed waiting in line and all that. So I think more people are finding out about splitboarding and realizing that there is, once you spend the $1,000 on your setup, and get yourself a little bit of mountain safety, avalanche awareness, it's safe to go out there with some friends and have a full day in the backcountry and take 3 or 4 runs, but you're not going to see anybody the whole day. And that's great. And you can pack your lunch, throw it in your bag and not really spending any money that day, which is pretty cool.
And Red, you had mentioned avalanche courses. Danny, have you taken some courses? Julia, is that something that you've done or that's going to be in the future?
Yeah, I've taken a couple of courses. I did take one with Brett and Danny when we were in Baldface. That was like a smaller one, but I've taken a few others like that were. But I think it's always like good to have a refresher, especially if I was like going out on a trip, like to do backcountry. I would definitely take like another refresher course to like make sure I have all my information dialed and know what I'm doing, so I can be like a contributing member to whatever group I'm going out with.
Yeah, I mean, that's Red and Jules are unique in the sense of their age and what the courses they've had and stuff. When I was younger, their age, I was going out heli in AK at the end of the year and not having a single avalanche course under my belt. But yeah, quite a few years ago, I started taking Abbey courses and getting some mountain safety. And now it's just, yeah, you kind of just, I do one every beginning of every year, whether it's like a woofer course or an actual Abbey One course or whatever, just to refresh everything. And all that stuff is like practice makes perfect. So the more you're using your beacon and you're familiar with your digging technique and, you know, how to work with a group and all that and be vocal and whatnot. Yeah, it's a good thing to take a refresher on every year for sure. And they're cheap. So anybody who's out there and thinks they've had their Abbey 1 and Abbey 2 a couple of years ago and they don't need any more of that, get yourself a refresher course because it's worth it. You always learn something new, you know.
I'm super stoked to hear you guys kind of different generations all understanding the importance of snow safety. And I think that as the resorts continue to get busier and busier, people are going to start to push out. And whether that's going out of the gates into the backcountry via the resort or starting a split board, the avalanche education really is this important component. We're actually starting to do scholarships here for people because every once in a while we meet somebody that's like, hey, I can't afford it. And it's like, well, you just went and bought, you know, splitboard, bindings, pole, pack. And then they're like, well, I don't have the $100 or $300 for the course. So we're really trying to get that more accessible. Have you guys noticed, I mean, you travel to these destination resorts, have the collective ski passes, I mean, you said lift lines. I thought it was just a thing here. I thought it was just a thing in Vail, but now it seems like this is kind of the new norm.
Yeah, it's hot. It's a popular sport right now. I think it's kind of thriving. You know, mountain biking as well. Like you order a mountain bike, it comes like 6 months later. You know, I think it's just, we're in this boom right now, which is great for the expansion of the sport, but we got to get a little bit more creative with where we go. That's for sure. I know that like, we love being out on the sleds. Trust me, it's so fun to get a little throttle therapy, but it gets harder and harder to get your own zone, not only away from other snowboarders who are trying to build jumps and hit the features that we're all looking after, but to keep the sledders from wrapping up your landing or going and completely tracking out a zone. So the backcountry is seeing more and more people as well. There's no doubt about that.
What about little mom and pop ski resorts? Did you guys, you know, here we have Snow King. I still kind of think Mount Baker's got that vibe. I mean, it's getting a lot busier. Are there places that, you know, that have really stood out from you over the years that have, you know, like a double chair or just something that's maybe not the mainstream resorts that everybody knows of? The reason I ask is both Warren Miller and TGR this year put out a film that was both individually about kind of different ski resorts. And, you know, maybe that's the future. I mean, we go to these other places and much less people. Obviously, don't want to totally blow up the spot, but I do think that that was a part of skiing that used to be really important. And, you know, maybe we see that come back a little bit.
Yeah. I think the small resorts are, there's the gems for sure. You know, on the East Coast, everyone talks about Stowe and how great Stowe is and the trees at Stowe. And then there's Smuggler's Notch on the other side and Sugarbush across the way. And, you know, you have that all over the U.S. too, I think. And on the West Coast, you know, Silverton's a gem out in Colorado, and there's some cool nuggets. Baker, yeah, it's great. It's at the end of a road. It's hard to get to. It's not, you know, it's a little bit further from Seattle. And so naturally, I think these small resorts, maybe two are, you know, that have a harder time really making the bottom dollar, making it work. But, you know, yeah, if you're an avid snowboarder and you're sick of your, or skier, and you're sick of your resort lift lines, open up the maps and just see what other stuff's a little bit further away for sure, or, you know, a little cutty.
Yeah, I started the last couple of years just kind of traveling to the smaller resorts. And yeah, the riding might not be as extreme as Jackson Hole or something, but there's something to be said when you show up and you see guys in like starter jeans or, you know, jeans and starter jackets. And you're like, oh, there is a different side of, you know, the industry that we just normally don't see. At this point, you know, all three of you guys are, you know, everybody knows you. If you're involved in the snowboard industry, I'm sure that there's Groms that come up to you and, you know, you're essentially almost idols. Who were some of the people that you guys looked up to or that maybe you had the chance of meeting via your snowboard career or just kind of in all the different celebrity stuff that you guys get to do? Is there anybody that's just kind of stood out, that one, you know, person that wowed you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a few of them for me. Luckily, I have gotten to meet, you know, a lot of them. A lot. Danny's always been one of mine that I've looked up to. That whole friends crew of his was someone that or a group that I loved what they did. And they just reminding, you know, like snowboard with your friends, have a good time and don't take it too seriously. But yeah, I mean, snowboarding definitely has led me, I feel like, to meeting some pretty cool people. None really outside of snowboarding I can think of, but.
I got into snowboarding in a pretty like interesting way. I started out skiing like just with my family like once a year for like a ski vacation, so we weren't like really involved in the mountain life. And then I found snowboarding when I was 13 and switched to that. So I didn't, a lot of my inspirations I met kind of like when I started snowboarding. So, you know, I kind of started getting to know them and would ride with them, and I still ride with them today, like, you know, girls like Jamie, who's just, you know, super, she's like the top of the sport, and she's a super awesome like friend to have. And I looked up to her when I was younger, and you know, she's pushed me a lot to be a better athlete and competitor and everything. So yeah, just kind of like entering the sport late and like seeing these girls killing it and kind of getting to like meet them as I'm getting into snowboarding was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've been doing this quite a long time. So for me, when I was young, it was just getting onto Burton when I was like 16 or 17 and hanging out with Ross Powers and Keir Dillon, and then meeting like Dan Cass. Now you see Dan Cass coaching at the top of the half pipe, like, you know, meeting all the snowboarders, great. And even now it's like splitboarding here in Tahoe, I'll go out with Jim Zellers and I'm just like, holy shit, like Zellers is such a legend. Like, you know, Jeremy Jones lives down the street. And, you know, outside, you know, all the snowboarders you meet are generally, it's rare that you had this built up image in your head of one of your favorite snowboarders and they don't deliver up to being a cool person, you know, like, man, like Barrett Christie, like meeting her and like, he was such a like babe when I was younger, like whatever. And you meet her now and she's just sweet as ever. You're like, she totally exceeds all the expectations. And a lot of the snowboarders are pretty darn cool. And then, you know, you get to meet all kinds of people. It's been a, you know, a long time of meeting all kinds of cool people. I was hanging out with Jake Burton one time and he was having dinner with Mike Myers when I ran into him and met Austin Powers. I was blown away. I mean, like, and in the surf world, you know, I'm such a fan of surfing and we get to hang out with like Benji Weatherly and, you know, we've met countless surfers and you go snowboarding with them. You know, Jamie O'Brien was up at Baldface one time, got to ride with him a bunch. Super cool dude. Chase Elliott, who's the NASCAR driver who used to drive for Mountain Dew and went to races of his and got to hang out with him before the race. And like, such a great kid, great snowboarder. Snowboarding really is this weird culture that when people find it, sometimes they get super sucked in. Like Steve Aoki, not the most amazing shredder, but the guy loves it and loves to learn tricks and pick your brain about it. And like, yeah, there's all these people that you meet throughout snowboarding that are just great. And then the Mountain Dew family, like back in the day, it was P-Rod and hanging out with Paul Rodriguez, like growing up as a skateboarder, that was like crazy going on photo shoots with P-Rod or like Curran and Malto and Cookie, like all the skaters on Dew are super cool. So we get to meet all kinds of cool people.
Awesome. We'll kind of wrap it up with this. Danny, I'm a huge Grateful Dead fan. So over the last, decade, it's been really cool to kind of see some of these different collabs you guys have done. What's the last concert that you guys all attended?
For me, that was probably the biggest thing like in life that changed for me with the pandemic was like not going to shows. Really trippy. But the last one I went to Red Rocks just like a month or two ago and saw Kruangbin. Great show at Red Rocks. Red Rocks is always a sick one. And it was sweet to be back at a concert. That was such a blast.
I almost went to a 311 concert that weekend. No, but to be honest, I haven't been to many concerts. Went to a Bob Marley and the Wailers like cover thing with my parents. And the last real one I went to was a Rob Zombie concert, and I flew to New Zealand the next day. It was incredible.
My dad actually both my parents, but like my dad especially, had like a big influence on my music taste. And he is a big Grateful Dead fan and like the Allman Brothers and, you know, all those kind of, but I haven't gone to too many concerts, honestly. I did go to George Thorogood once with my dad, which was cool. But yeah, that's kind of it. I haven't gone to too many.
If your last concert was a George Thorogood, hell yeah. That's the sickest thing I've heard in a while. You probably were young and you don't remember it all that well, but that guy is a hell of a performer. Like a 3-hour show straight.
I mean, I wasn't too young. I was a teenager. So I do remember it though. It was in New York. And yeah, my dad and I were just jamming out to all like the songs he showed me when I was a kid from him. He has a really, really cool musical taste. And it's like all transferred onto me. And I have all his old albums from when he was a kid. So I've got like all his good records. And Mountain Dew got me a record player for my birthday, which was just insane. So I was able to actually play all the records from my dad. So yeah. Music is awesome.
More concerts in the future, though, for sure. I'm stoked that we're kind of getting back to somewhat of a normal and we can start going to shows.
Yeah, I think for everyone that lives in the mountains, just music in general, it goes hand in hand with sports. And when I first started this website, I was a photographer at Red Rocks. So I would just go and shoot photos and then I'd go up to Aspen or go to the X Games and just kind of put it all together. And people were like, why are you combining all this? I'm like, because this is what we do when we live in the mountains. And now we've started covering hunting and mountain biking, and it seems like everybody's kind of wanting to do stuff year round now. And yeah, I appreciate you guys taking the time to chat. Best of luck with competing. Stay safe with COVID. I know that's got to be interesting traveling. And I look forward to seeing what you guys do. Last but not least, what's your favorite flavor of Mountain Dew?
Code Red.
I like the kickstarts, like the orange citrus or the fruit punch kickstarts. Those are nice.
Well, you know, it's not often, but, you know, the Baja Blast comes out once in a while. T-Bell. No, I just like the Fountain Dew, man. I don't know. It's just not the same when it comes out in a bottle or something. I love the Fountain Dew.
Cool.
Give me one of those machines in my house.
I bet Mountain Dew's listening. There you go. So Julia got a record player, so. What do you want, Red? Cool. Well, thank you guys. I'm sure you have a busy day. Appreciate it. And Rich Goodwin said to say hi. And
hi.
That's about all. So you guys take care. All right. Well, that was a rad interview with Julia, Danny, and Red. Be sure to hit the like button if you dig what we're talking about. Subscribe, share this with your friends, all that fun stuff. Anyway, this is going to wrap up episode number 41 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Peace.